fantasy epic sagas, Magic the Gathering.
Like, those are the same colors?
We got this Naya deck, right? We're playing all these planeswalkers, we're playing, and we're playing tokens.
Yeah, Naya's super friends. It's gonna be kind of a wild west out there. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Shuffling Randomly. Sorry about the hiatus. We were doing some stuff. We got some stuff burning on the back burner, on the front burner, in the oven. Before we get into our show, though, I want to tell you about one of the things that is bringing us here today. It's a brand new web series, web comic, using the infinite canvas. It's called Fruition of the Damned, written in part by my co-host, Jeremy McKinnon, and his partner in crime, who you've seen on the episodes, Keenan Carolla. And they have a great artist as well. And it's coming up soon on Kickstarter. So if you like fantasy epic sagas, you should check out Fruition of the Damned. We'll talk about it more in the show, but I just want to put it out there for you guys.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Just so everyone knows, it's the coolest Kickstarter you've seen in a while. It's Fruition of the Damned, and it starts on Valentine's Day. So check it out. And it goes till the Ides of March. That's March 15th. Again, we'll mention it again later, but thanks for checking it out.
All right, now let's get to some Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk. There's been so much. I mean, modern bans, the new set we haven't talked about.
Yeah, so let's just do some quick updates. So our last episode, we actually had Steve Murky on. He had just qualified for the Pro Tour through an RPTQ using Jund. And I know he's been testing with a bunch of people around Madison. I'm not going to spoil the deck that he's on. But, you know, time has flown and it's already time for that Pro Tour. But one thing that I'm fairly confident of is that the deck that he was playing, Jund, is not going to be such a huge pillar in that Pro Tour. And that is because, as Jeremy mentioned, Splinter Twin got banned. Amulet Bloom got banned. Why isn't it going to be such a big part of the format? Because the decks that it was best against got banned. Splinter Twin, pillar of the format, really propped up Jund. They were pretty much 50-50. Maybe Splinter Twin had a little bit of an edge, but a deck running Abrupt Decay, running Terminate, running Early Disruption really fed on the fact that there was a combo deck keeping all of the decks it was bad against in check. They really had a symbiotic relationship. Now that Splinter Twin's gone, you're going to see a lot more affinity, a lot more infect, a lot more combo, Ad Nauseam, Grizzle Shoal, and whatever. I don't think Jund's going to have the tools week one, essentially, Pro Tour, Oath of the Gatewatch, to deal with that. And so I think we're going to see a Pro Tour that's going to be super explosive, super crazy combos. Everyone's going to be running wild. Hopefully, we'll see it on camera with a few team decks like Tron, like Infect, like Infinity, maybe something spicy if one of the European teams puts their thinking caps on. But it's going to be kind of a wild west out there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you say about the, you know, the symbiotic relationship where, you know, one deck goes out doesn't just mean, you know, that's a meta change that, you know, one change affects everything. I'm wondering if, you know, early game, what will non-Splinter Twin Red see? And what are people going to play with their, you know, Snapcasters?
Yeah, I mean, it's really...
What's going to replace this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that anything can replace it right now. I actually played at a Grand Prix trial a couple weeks ago. I was able to borrow an Affinity deck. I played Amulet Bloom twice, beat it both times. I lost to Infect, and I beat a Merfolk player. I got to the finals against a blue-red Splinter Twin player who was the one who drove me to the tournament, who was the one who lent me the Affinity deck, who was definitely going to the Grand Prix. And so I just scooped to him. He said he had a really great matchup. We played a game for fun, and I actually crushed him. So, I mean, Affinity, that was the first time I'd ever touched the deck with my hands. And it was just so explosive. You know, I was winning games left and right. Like, multiple turn three kills. Like, just, you know, drop my hand, have Arcbound Ravagers, bounce them across each other, you know, put it on a Blink Moth Nexus or an Ink Moth Nexus, kill him with poison, kill him with damage. I mean, playing Cranial Plating and Arcbound Ravager, like those, that's insane. So Affinity, I think, is going to be one of the biggest winners from the bans.
Yeah. I have a large, like, I have almost every card necessary besides the artifact that comes out for zero, the $50 one.
The Mox Opal, yep.
Yeah, so, you know, four Mox Opals, I might see that planned. Otherwise, I'm sticking with Goblins, and I have one new Bushwhacker to consider, but I haven't tested anything yet. I don't know how you feel about that, but, I mean, it does give me another option. It's somewhat... It's more about creating a new kind of very heavy Bushwhacker Goblin deck, where it's just a new Bushwhacker that I can get something out free. I can also play in Modern, you know, the standard Goblin, you have to cast a spell before you cast them as a Bushwhacker, basically. And so with spells like, you know, that cost two life instead of mana, that can be really explosive. So I'm just not sure what's going to happen there, but I'm really excited that Splinter Twin is banned, because that was that combination of colors that making that deck so strong just gave, you know, me and any other, you know, like you said, Affinity, like very small early game creature decks like that, a lot of wiggle room, where you can't just like bolt, Snapcaster bolt, and then win the game. Like, it's a big deal.
Yeah, and I mean, Affinity, Goblins, Infect, Elves. When I was at that GPT, I actually played someone who was on Merfolk, and we played a game on Merfolk, and I mean, it was a good deck. She was doing well in the tournament, and then I was just like, okay, like, we ended up drawing, and we ended up seeing each other in the top four, but after we drew in the normal rounds, I got out the Elf deck, and I played that, and it crushed, and it's just... Elves wasn't, you know, top tier, but I feel like with Splinter Twin gone, it makes Elves better, because Splinter Twin necessitated Abrupt Decay if you're playing green-black. It necessitated an ability to either win faster than turn three or interact with their Deceiver, Exarch, Pestermite. And now that you don't need to, and the fact that you can kill without having to untap, so Shaman of the Pack makes it so you don't need to attack with everyone. So you don't need to lay out all these threats, hope they don't cast Kozilek's Return, the new sweeper out of Oath of the Gatewatch. You can just win on the spot. You can play something, Summoner's Pack, Collected Company, and just win right there. You can just win right there, and there's not going to be counter spells anymore. Control isn't really viable right now. So it's going to be who can combo faster or who can stop you from comboing and then go over the top. So the metagame right now is like Tron and Eldrazi, giant mana ramp decks, and crazy combo-ish aggro. It's crazy. Speaking of your Goblins deck, though, you mentioned Reckless Bushwhacker. I think that's the name. There's another Goblin that I saw, and it probably isn't good enough. It's really great in Standard right now.
It is. I bet it's...
Dark Dwellers?
Dark Dwellers, yeah. It's really good in Standard.
So, 5 is a lot for your deck. But if you can cheat it into play using Warren Instigator and get back a Goblin Grenade... You know what I'm saying? Like, you...
Exactly.
It puts it into play. You get to cast a spell from your graveyard, and then you just sack the Dark Dwellers or sack whatever for free, you know? I mean, the sacrificing is even an alternate cost, so I'm not even... I assume you still have to sack a Goblin. I don't think they made it that ridiculous, but...
Without paying its mana cost.
Right, without paying its mana cost. So, yeah, I mean, that's something to consider as a one-of to just get, like, a fifth Goblin Grenade or a fifth burn spell or whatever.
Yeah, it is a really good, it's just a solid Goblin for 5 to that. It just, there's other, the other Goblins like Murderous Red Cap, it's like 2 damage, for four, and it's just like you have to instigate her that in two, basically, at four, but it's not quite as powerful. This is like, you know, anything that I've cast. I mean, it's a bolt, it's a goblin grenade, it's a dragon fodder. A dragon fodder, less effectiveness because of the fact that it has to come in during combat damage phase.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. You can cast the spell at any time.
Okay.
It's just like
instigating it in, I'm saying, I guess.
No, but you can cast the spell that you can cast off of the Dark Dwellers at any time. You don't need to cast it as an instant.
Right. Okay.
So you can get the Goblin Dark Dwellers in, you know, combat completes, second main phase, cast, you know, Hordling Outburst or Dragon Fodder or whatever.
Right. I do like it. If the instigator, like if I can really make a good instigator deck, then it will probably see its way in there in testing. Right now, I'm thinking of just trying to go really, really direct. But the instigator might work really well in an Aethervile sort of goblin deck. But I haven't really played a lot of the Aethervile goblin decks. I've been playing very, very like early one drop, just kind of really fast with the target's command and, like, you know, haste creatures and such, just one drops and not really focusing on getting that turn two out because it always gets killed. But if the idea, if I'm playing these combo decks that are mostly just focused on their own game and it's Splinter Twin is not, like, no one's playing it and it's just not viable, then that might change. I mean, an instigator turn three wins the game all the time if they don't do anything about it. So, you know, if...
So I just want to stop for a quick second. I was wrong. It does say when it enters the battlefield, you may cast target instant or sorcery without paying its mana cost from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. I think it, since it's an enter the battlefield ability and it doesn't say gains flashback, I think you do have to cast it at that time, in that phase.
Yeah. In that, before the trigger resolves?
Yeah.
That's fine. Nonetheless. Okay, and we can edit that in.
Well, no, I think it's fine to correct on air. I think that's...
Sure. Okay, and yeah, I mean, right now with the extra Bushwhacker, I just kind of feel like running, you know, a really, really consistent, like, Goblin Guide Bushwhacker... Goblin Grenade Burn deck, where it's just, you know, you got a target's command, Lightning Bolt, and Goblin Grenade, and the rest are just instigators. I mean, not instigators. The rest are just Bushwhackers and Goblin Guides and Loyalists and other one-drops like that sack. And it just, that turn two attack damage is like against Affinity, they're going to have to, you know, it might be a race to turn three, but the numbers get there turn three with Goblin Grenades and Lightning Bolts, so it's enough if you get the right consistency going, but I'm really not sure. I really need to test.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I loved playing Affinity, and I wish I owned the deck. I'm not going to be buying into it anytime soon. I assume it's only more expensive now than ever, and I know I lent you some cards for that. Some Ink Moths.
Well, the thing is, I'll give you my deck if you want to get the Opals.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm not really playing it otherwise, and like you said, like, you know that deck almost better than I do.
No, I'm just saying, like, yeah, it's crazy right now.
But there's also that new land that just came out. Were you playing with that? Holdout Settlement. It basically, it taps for a colorless and then also gives you a friggin' Springleaf Drum. For a color.
You know, I did see that, and I actually played against an Eldrazi deck last night that played it. Yeah, I mean, that's really good.
Seagate Pidge, I mean, draw a card for three, including itself. So, I mean, you know, with an Affinity deck, you're just out of cards turn two. Maybe you need that one extra card.
Yeah, I mean, Seagate Wreckage is really interesting because this actually happened to me last night. You can have two of them out and activate them both with the first one on the stack and draw two cards. because you can only activate this ability when you only have no cards.
You activate in response.
Yeah. It doesn't check on resolution. I mean, it's all of this is like really tempting, and it's like, I mean, the thing about Affinity though is that it runs so few land, and the only land that it plays that doesn't deal damage are usually one basic land. In the deck I was playing, it was one island, so I could play Thoughtcast, and then it plays four Glimmer Void, which produce any color of mana. The only restriction is at the beginning of the end step, anyone's end step, if you don't control an artifact, you have to sacrifice it. But, like, the only time that matters is if they kill... they kill everything, or, like, you... Yeah, basically, if you're going to lose anyway. Like, there's no way to, like, refuel outside of Thoughtcast, and that's two cards. That's not enough to, like, build a giant robotic monster, which is what you need to win. All right, so that's a lot on Modern. What cards for Standard out of Oath of the Gatewatch are you excited about?
I'm really excited about the Nissa. The Oaths are okay. I mean, for Standard, I like them. I don't know how big the Eldrazi decks are right now. It's hard for me to judge without playing that much Eldrazi, but...
Well, funny you should say that, because if you go to shufflingrandomly.com, I actually just posted up on the website two articles, one of which is the Day 2 metagame of Star City Games Atlanta. It was the first major Standard tournament of this new Oath of the Gatewatch Standard. And there's basically six big decks right now. There's Rally the Ancestors. There's Abzan Dex, a little behind that. Then, pretty much tied is Jeskai, Eldrazi, and Mardu. And, I mean, that's significant if only for the fact that, for Eldrazi, they were 12% of the metagame on the first weekend. So, that has to do with card availability. That has to do with spread of technology. You know, did people know this deck existed, and did they want to play it? And the fact that 12% of the Day 2 field was made up of these decks that not a lot of people maybe had a build on, not a lot of people knew existed, not a lot of people could access cards, really speaks to how powerful the deck is. So on this graph, you see it has 12%, but there's actually two, maybe three decks going on there. There's the big green-red Eldrazi, kind of like Tron in Modern. It plays a lot of ramp spells. It plays the land from Battle for Zendikar that whenever you play a colorless spell that costs 7 or more, sack it, find another spell, colorless creature. So you play Ugin, get an Ulamog. Play Ulamog, get a Kozilek. I mean, there's that deck. And then there's this mono black deck that came a little bit out of nowhere. I played against it last night as well. It uses the aggressively costed all... It's basically all colorless, and it just plays the Eldrazi that have a black casting cost. So it doesn't play that many basic lands because it needs Cave of Quelos and Land War Wastes to be able to provide colorless mana, because the Pain lands are now dual lands. They provide colorless... And then, or they're tri-lands. They produce colorless, which is now a distinct color, and green or white and black. So there's like two or three Eldrazi decks. I think there was also a blue-black one, maybe? I'm not quite sure how that was built, but I think it was in the top 32. And yeah, I mean, it's Abzan, Rally the Ancestors, Eldrazi, Mardu. That's like a Mardu green deck, which shares a lot of space with the Abzan deck, because there's, like, a lot of Abzan red, and, like, those are the same colors, because Abzan is white, black, green, splash red, and Mardu is red, white, black, splash green, so, yeah.
I mean, I love these color combinations. I love that it's flexible like this.
Yeah.
It is fun.
So, the card that I want to talk about out of Oath of the Gatewatch is the Green Ponder, aka Oath of Nissa. Because that card is ridiculous. I was playing it last night, and every single one of my opponents was like, wait, it does what? Because you play it, turn one, turn two, very late in the game, any time you feel like playing it, you have a spare green mana, and you look at the top three cards of your library, you get to take a land, or a creature, or a planeswalker. And like, I had one opponent, and he's like, wait, this gets planeswalkers? And then the next time I cast it, he's like, wait, this gets land? Like, any point in the game in which you need something, it's useful. Early on, you can keep it with like two or three land. Let's say you have three land, it, and a Siege Rhino. You're going to hit that third land. You're going to play it. You're going to find one of the three cards on your top of your library is going to be a land. If none of them are a land, it's going to be something that you want at some point, and then you just put three cards that weren't land, or, you know, one in your hand and two on the bottom, making it so you're probably going to find a land. Like, or you get a creature or a planeswalker. And because they're legendary enchantments, you play them, and the one that, you know, presumably the one that you had originally goes into the graveyard. So you can fill your, you know, they don't just like clog the board as like weird enchantments. They also, the second one basically makes the first one act as if it were a spell, which helps your delve cards. So if you're playing Tasigur, you know, it can get delved away. Or if for some reason you want to do this, I don't know why you would, but you could Den Protector it back and play it again later to find more gas. If, like, for some reason you exiled your whole graveyard to play a Tasker, to play a Murderous Cut, and you only have that, and you have a Den Protector and your hand's empty, you play Den Protector, you get back Oath of Nissa, you play it for one mana, you look in the top three, you grab a Siege Rhino, you grab, you know, whatever, and you slam it down. Like, that's it's ridiculous. Like, it is
not... Yeah, it's a green ponder. It doesn't grab itself. So that's the only thing you know, it won't grab itself, but beyond that, like, it'll grab anything else you really want in a green deck.
Yeah, I mean, like, it doesn't grab itself, which is fine, because why would you want it to get itself, yeah. You know? Like, and then it doesn't grab instants or sorceries, which can be problematic, but... You know, it can't literally be Ponder in a green deck. And oftentimes, I mean, Frank Carson has an article up on Channel Fireball talking about the amount of, you know, hits you need in your deck to make it worthwhile playing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is including land. So he said, you know, borderline, where he thinks it's acceptable, is 42 targets. Now, if you're playing a 24 land deck or a 26 land deck, you know, that's 16 creatures / planeswalkers. Like, you're playing green, you're going to have, you know, more than 10 or 12 creatures.
And there's great planeswalkers out.
There's great planeswalkers. So, you know, you can play up to, if you include the oaths, you can play up to 18 spells and reasonably expect to hit with it.
I mean, I kind of want to play this in my green red goblin deck, like just grabbing goblins.
Yeah, I mean, because it gives you the card selection as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's card selection for one. That's three, and it's not like discard one and like it's just put it into your hand, and to be able to grab a new goblin is huge.
Yeah, and I mean, it's slightly, I mean, it's not, I'm not going to say it's better than Ponder, but its effect is different in that you're scrying. You're not just reordering them on the top of your library.
Exactly, but you're also, like, getting the spending mana for any, like, correction for planeswalkers. I mean, that is something also. I mean...
That's definitely relevant. Yeah. So the deck that I'm playing right now, unsurprisingly, is an Abzan list. And I played it last night. I had added a land to make it go up to 25 land earlier. hadn't done as much testing, and I didn't do so well, and there was like a lot of flooding involved, and I think if I had stayed at 24, it would have worked better. But one of the things that this lets you do, I'm getting on an aside about land on my aside about the deck that I played on the aside about Oath of Nissa, but we'll get back. Because it finds lands, if you need them, you can play 24 land instead of 26. You can play 23 land if you have a super aggressive deck. But I'm also playing Sorin, Solemn Visitor, and Obnixilus Reignited. Mm-hmm. But it lets me cast those even if I don't have double black at the time.
It allows you to commit a little bit more maybe to green mana, but your I guess you could say exotic colors, your black, white, get covered by this also. And like you said, like if someone's gonna spend another spell to get rid of this oath, it's like, okay, thanks, I'll cast another, and now it's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like if they kill the
cast it anyway at the beginning of the turn, so that you have your turn ahead of you, and so, you know, no one's gonna get rid of them. It's basically like not worth it to get rid of them when you're. Getting rid of them, it means you also have a threat in your hand that you just chose to have, and you're not going to get rid of that. No, you're going to save your spell for whatever the person just got from it. So it's just like this awesome way to have this mana correction. Like, I mean, do you have a Gideon in there, or you just don't even?
So I had Gideon originally, and it was a little too much on the mana. It was really reliant on hitting Oath to be able to cast it, and. The way I've built the deck, much more black because of a reprint. They reprinted Grasp of Darkness, which is double black, target creature gets -4/-4, which kills most things in the format. And those things that it doesn't kill, like Sea Trino, it lets you, you know, set up really good blocks or really good attacks where they think it's going to survive. And then suddenly their Sea Drino's a 0/1, which is different than dealing 4 damage to it, because a 0/1 can't kill a 2/2, but a 4/5 with 4 damage marked on it can still kill a, you know, a 2/2.
And also you're trampling over, so it's still going to affect your trample numbers, even if it doesn't kill it.
Right, yeah, it can't, I mean, the way trample works, if you're attacking into a Sea Drino, it would work the same, because you only assign lethal damage with trample, but coming the other way, it attacking you, if you block with a 1/1 and then, you know, make it -4/-4, nothing gets through, as opposed to, you know, but yeah, there's that, and because that's a double black spell, you can play something like Sorin and use no black mana. You can play Sorin, you can play Obnixilus, and you can use none of your black mana to cast them, and leave that black mana open for your Murderous Cuts and your Grasp of Darkness. So just being able to use like all green and white mana to cast the black Planeswalker makes it so you can cast black spells out of your hand. It's just like it shouldn't help your spells be easier to cast, but it does because it makes your Planeswalkers easier to cast. It's like a weird synergy. So I'm just really, really hyped on that card. I pre-ordered 4. I got them already. There's a card that I also really love right above it on the spoiler at mythicspoiler.com, which is Sylvan Advocate. I didn't play it last night. I don't own any copies. I hope it doesn't go up in price. I think it was like $3 when I looked last night, and the store I was at didn't have it. Right, I was playing Nissa, the Flip Planeswalker. The 3 mana comes in, finds a forest. But it made me play 3 forests because I didn't want to play Nissa and then not be able to find a forest if I played it late. And Sylvan Advocate is actually... I just played one game before I started to talk, so I'm a little hot on it right now, but it's crazy. Mostly because Nissa, the 3 mana one, obviously comes down in turn 3. It requires the 7th land to flip. Sylvan Advocate, if you control 6 or more land, it gets +2/+2. And land creatures you control get +2/+2. So on your 6th turn instead of your 7th turn, you get a 4/5. So, essentially a siege rhino.
Yeah.
With vigilance.
For 2.
For 2. And it makes your shambling vents 4/5s with lifelink. Mm-hmm. It makes your hissing quagmires 4/4s with death touch.
Okay.
Like...
I see where you're going with this.
Like, you're playing these... I'm playing for creature lands anyways, so, and it's very common to get to 6 mana, much easier than... Like, it's actually, if you look at the math, much... Like, there's a huge gap between the 6th and the 7th and the 7th and the 8th mana, like, your likelihood of hitting it.
Yeah.
So, having it on 6 and not having to, like, have it interplay or trigger anything, and the fact that it's a 2/3 with vigilance on turn 2, like, it can block a Monastery Swift Spear. It can block... pretty much anything, and it doesn't die like Nissa does to Fiery Impulse without Spell Mastery, which they're not going to have early. It doesn't die to Wild Slash. It doesn't die to Reality Hemorrhage, which doesn't really get played, but it's a 2-mana burn spell for 2. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just much more resilient, and later on, you have Vigilance on a 4/5 that makes all of your, like, you know, sorcery immune land creatures huge. And I mean, if you have 2 of them, who knows? You know, who knows what could happen with, you know, 6/7 Tarmogoyf-esque shambling vents. I don't know, you know? That I don't think I'm crazy for wanting to do that. I think that's a pretty good idea.
I like it. I do like the Oath of the Chandra, which might see some play. I mean, that's because it does that 3 damage to the opponent because of things like Sylvan Advocate. So, like, it's a 3 damage 2 spell, but it also gives you a lot of potential late with that ability when you Planeswalker. It's 2 more damage for a Planeswalker. So, I mean, I'm not sure what other red... Planeswalkers or what other Planeswalkers it would play. I mean, Chandra's for 6. It seems kind of odd or really big for red, but I guess it's where red's going now. But nonetheless, it's a burn spell that might get you 2 extra damage. It's got some potential, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I think because it's a red and a colorless, and it's not like a red colorless, which I almost feel like they wanted to do. Like, I feel like they can't give red nice things. But, you know, because it is a... I'm trying to think of the card. But it's, you know, 3 damage specifically to a creature for 2 mana. You know, it's a bad, you know, lightning strike. But, I mean, okay. But then every planeswalker after that means you're getting... free 2 damage.
Right.
And that's just crazy. I mean, like, if you're playing it in a red-blue deck with Prowess, let's say, and you're playing Jace, right. Okay, so you just flip Jace, and you get 2 damage. So you got 5 damage split between, you know, you got a Searing Blood, essentially, or reverse Searing Blood.
Exactly. It's kind of like a Searing Blood that could potentially give you another Searing Blood trigger.
Yeah. If you're playing it in green, I mean, there's a lot of green planeswalkers right now. If you're playing it in like a teamer build with Sarkons,
it's red white kind of
red white with Gideon.
Yeah,
there's a lot, and I mean, the red Chandra.
Gideon dies, you play another Gideon, you get 2 more. I mean,
yeah, you could cash in Gideon just for the emblem to boost all of your like goblin tokens or whatever, or your tokens off Oath of Gideon. So you just got 2 damage to the face, you gave your creatures +1/+1 permanently, and you attack. Like, what? And Chandra Flamecaller, the 6 drop, I actually want to get a copy. I didn't think I wanted one, but it's been seeing some play, and people have been somewhat convincingly saying it is like the new Elspeth of the format. It's 6 mana, which is a lot. But you're if you're
pumping tokens and tokens and tokens.
Yeah, I mean the tokens don't stick around, but your you know, your Thunder Spark or whatever, Hell Spark Elemental or Thunder whatever, Hell's Thunder, whatever those things are. The 3 ones with trample and haste that, you know, exile at the end of the turn, you know, That's crazy. You plus it, it goes up to 5, and you get 6 damage coming across. Like, what? And then it's 0. The fact that it has a draw spell on it for 0. Discard all the cards in your hand, then draw that many cards plus 1. So it has a 0, draw 1 card, essentially. You know, mm-hmm. if you're playing a consistent deck, all cards being equal, you would rather have 7 cards in your hand than 6. You would rather have 3 than 2. That's amazing. Like, that's really, really good, especially later in the game, if, like, you land it and you don't have very good cards in your hand, and you're like, I need to, you know, I need something right now. And it's like, oh, here's my dig through time. Here's my treasure cruise. Here's my, you know, whatever. And it's like, oh, can I cast these delve spells? Well, yes, I can, because I just discarded my entire hand to draw these cards. Like, all right. I mean, regardless of the fact that you're on turn 6, 7, or 8, and your graveyard should already be, you know, pretty well stocked, it also fuels delve cards that you could draw off of its 0 ability. I played against it last night, actually. I didn't lose to it because I was able to Oath of Nyssa into an Obnixilis and play a Kalitas in the same turn. And so I was able to get 2 zombies and kill a Jace and gain some life. I don't know, something weird happened, but Kalitas is another card that's crazy right now. Have you looked at that one?
What card is it?
Kalitas, Traitor of Get.
Where is it?
It's the very top of the spoiler. It's the black mythic.
Okay. Yeah, let me look at it. But yeah, go ahead. Kalitas?
Yeah, it's the second paragraph of text that's the most important. Okay, it's a 3/4 with lifelink, whatever. But if a non-creature token your opponent controls would die, instead exiling it, which messes with the rally decks, and put a 2/2 black zombie token onto the battlefield.
Exactly.
Under your control. So you kill something, it's exiled, they don't get their, you know, death triggers if they're playing like Zulaport Cutthroat or anything that cares about creatures dying, doesn't trigger because it exiles instead.
One of the best cards on the deck, you said. I mean, in the meta.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get a 2/2 zombie. And it has lifelink. So, like, if you're playing this card against mono red and you've survived turn 4 or let's say turn 5, maybe you play, you know, some stuff, the game is kind of stalemating, but you're still kind of worried about getting team or battle raged out or something like that. If you play it and leave a mana up and you're able to kill something, like you get another blocker, like you make guys while they lose guys, and they don't have a lot of guys, like red decks, and you have lifelink. Like, it's really good against aggro because of the lifelink and the fact that it builds more bodies around it, and it can get bigger if you sacrifice them. It's just a crazy card. So I'm basically finding all the cards that I like in the format right now in this new set, and I'm just jamming them into an Abzan list. Like, Seadrino, meet your new friends. We're going, you know, Kalitas, Sylvan Advocate. Like, everything's going to be a 4/5. Like, let's go crazy.
Your Oath's going to get you a Kalitas and a new Nyssa.
Not the new Nyssa. I actually don't like the new Nyssa in this deck. I think the new Nyssa goes in like a token deck of some sort. Green-white with Gideon and Gideon's Oath.
Yeah, maybe just, I mean, depending on what landfall there is.
Why do you keep saying landfall?
That's actually it's only its ultimate. I thought it was more effective and or more part of its counters, but no, that's just the ultimate of Nyssa.
Yeah. It's, I think 9 times out of 10 you're gonna play it in -2.
Yeah.
And then if it survives, okay, great. You're gonna put out a plant so you can -2 again.
Yeah, depending on the board state, you might plus it once and then put a counter on your plant.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, yeah.
I mean, you're probably going to play like an Oath of Gideon before that, or a Secure the Wastes, or a Gideon, you know, the Planeswalker, Or a, I mean, you play Naya, you could play Hordling Outburst,
good,
and, you
there's
know.
There's such good Planeswalkers out there otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm usually assuming a Nissa is going to be worth it, but it's not.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. It's just, like, right now, who knows?
Not an Abzan.
Like, yeah. No, there's better things to do on 3-mana.
Even the other Nissa is probably better.
Yeah. It's just 2-mana. I mean, you have to have double green, and I mean, you could play it in an Oath of Nissa deck, but you're not going to reliably have Oath of Nissa down before turn 3, so I think it can come down turn 4 or 5 as long as you're playing tokens somewhere in between, you know, 2 and 5, and then so
it's
like
a bulk state plus it's plus one counters.
Yeah,
so
you'd almost have to build the deck like a Naya deck with a, like, green being a relatively small splash because you want to be able to hit for
exactly.
Gideon.
Build Naya, and then you can even play it with some Chandra Flame Collar and put some counters on your elementals.
Yeah, Naya Super Friends.
Right.
We got it. We solved the format.
Naya Super Friends, Gideon, Chandra, Voice.
Yeah. And they all have...
Play all the oaths. You can play all the oaths.
Yeah.
But they grab each other, so you don't necessarily want too many oaths, targeting oaths, but nonetheless. I mean, lands, like you said, and then, like, you know, you gain X life and draw X cards, number of lands you control. I mean, with the right sweepers out there, it's like all these tokens come out, like, you can just, like, control the board and then, like you said, drop your new red Elspeth and just kind of control the board with tokens and planeswalkers after sweeping it with things like, what's the new sweeper? That's the last card I really want to talk about. We brought it up.
Oh, I don't even know.
The sweeper that comes back. Oh, and there's also, didn't they reprint +3/-3?
Yep. It's a new one, Spatial Contortion, I think. That's one. And then, I mean, there's a sweeper, there's a Drowned in Sorrow-esque 2-black colorless creatures get -2/-2. Is that what you're talking about?
I thought it was a red card that was 2 damage to each creature and then it comes back and
Kozilek's Return. Yep. Before we get there, though, I just want to stay on this Naya deck that we were talking about just really quick. So, okay. We got this Naya deck, right? We're playing all these planeswalkers, and we're playing tokens, right?
Yeah.
We're playing Secure the Wastes, Hordling Outburst, Dragon Fodder, and we're playing Oaths, so we get tokens off of Gideon's Oath. We have Removal in Oath of Gideon. We have a Cantrip in Oath of Nissa. And then you also play Reckless Bushwhacker.
Yeah, okay. Bushwhacker.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing tokens, why not play Bushwhacker?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when... Let me look at Reckless. Let me look at this guy. Because, I mean...
I mean, with Surge, he's a two...
It has to be the Surge cost, correct?
Yeah, it has to be the Surge cost, yeah.
Okay. Well, nonetheless, I mean, it is great in this in the red.
And it's splashable. It's only one red. It's not double red like the other Bushwhacker.
Yeah, or, you know, even like... Yeah, exactly. I think... You'd be, you know, with efficiency and tokens, you can go wide enough to have a Bushwhacker, and you can also, like I said, like, because your tokens are largely, like, I think the Secure the Waste and the Dragon Fodder are the key ones. The Hordling Outburst may be one of, but, I mean, you want to use, like, Planeswalkers. They're such a good source of tokens with your new Elspeth for red, essentially, as we're calling it. It's great to go wide, but also have a source of tokens that stays late game, so you can, you know, not you can survive a board sweep and it comes back. It's not just Dragon Fodders and Secure the Ways. You know, you're getting more out of your cards as planeswalkers to keep pumping out your tokens, and you can survive board swipes, which might help you win against things like the Eldrazi. It might help you if they're board swiping, or if you want a board swipe, and then just start, you know, Elspething away with 6 attack power. I think there's a lot of potential in this. And Bushwhacker, like you said, you can go wide enough too. Because you like, you know, the Eldrazi deck's having such big bad monsters, and you know the Abzan having a Siege Rhino and Sylvan Things. These are big early creatures, but the tokens going wide, and being able to survive sweeps. I kind of like this deck.
Yeah. I mean, who knows if it works on paper, if the mana isn't terrible.
Yeah, this is brainstorming 101. Just who cares?
It's
a cool idea.
But
we're going to pretend it's going to work until we do it.
And we have perfect mana. I mean,
yeah,
we do. We have Cinder Glade and Canopy Vista, which are the two dual lands that are in color. And we have Wooded Foothills and Windswept Teeth. So
Sylvan Advocate in there of a one of, and then maybe even the new, I love the new red-white... creature land.
Yeah,
Spires.
So we have everything we need. We have Stomping Ground essentially. We have oh my god, I can't think of it right now. Temple Garden, and then we have Sacred Foundry in the form of a creature land. Yeah. So we have all three dual lands and ways to fetch up two of them, and ways to, and you can use Oath of Nissa to find the Sacred Foundry creature land, because it searches up creatures off the top of your library.
And it searches up land, so it's Needle
yeah.
Spires.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you can get Planeswalkers late, you can get Needle Spires or Sylvan Advocate early. I think we just broke the format, so I'm really, really excited about the fact that, you know, we're restarting this podcast on a new year, and, you know, we've already done some damage to Standard. And for those of you listening, yes, this hubris is real, and yes, we're this awesome. So get excited for the next episode. And on that, I want to end this podcast with how we started this podcast. And Jeremy, I want to have you talk to our listeners about what you've been working on for the past couple months and what's up.
Thanks again, Matt. I just want to remind people, Kickstarter starts on Valentine's Day, and it ends on the Ides of March, March 15th. Check it out. There's t-shirts, posters, signed stuff. You'll never be able to get it again. It's fruitionofthedamned.com. You can get the link on shufflingrandomly.com as well. So help us out. Join the Kickstarter. I know you guys are going to love it. If you like magic, it's right up your alley. Check it out. fruitionofthedamned.com.